We have a great subscription offer for all our listeners. Subscribe to our digital edition for 12 months for just $24.99. That's 6 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your inbox for less than $4.20 an issue. Only $24.99 for a full year. So don't wait. To subscribe, go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. That's australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.
Hi, I'm Liz Guinness, and welcome to Talking Australia. In April this year, Sydney-based school teacher Lauren Tischendorf became the first woman to swim solo around Lord Howe Island. She says it was a treacherously joyful experience as she battled 2.5 metre swells the entire way, not to mention tiger and mako sharks and stubborn ocean currents that had her swimming in place for hours on end. So what does it take to prepare for such an experience? And perhaps more interestingly, why would you even want to? Let's dive in with Lauren and find out. I'm sure that many people have heard of Lord Howe Island and picture it, and you know, the mountains and the gorgeous calm ocean that surrounds it for most of it. But it sounds like you didn't enjoy those sorts of calm conditions on the day that you swam.
In actual fact, I didn't mind them. I really enjoyed it. I'm used to swimming. I swim at Bondi. Bondi is in Coogee, my local beaches, I guess, where I swim. Mm-hmm. And I've been training in big surf, and I've always enjoyed swimming in big surf. I was ready for it. I guess I wasn't expecting for, you know, over half of my time there to be in big swell, but that was it. And, you know, I guess in any challenge you face, you just push forwards and swim through.
Well, absolutely. I guess it would be really lovely for people to hear how you came to be, to decide to swim around Lord Howe. And I guess I'm interested to know about your formative years as well, and whether you were an adventurous child, an athletic child, whether this is something you've come to later in life. So maybe we can rewind the clock some years and start mm-hmm. with where it all began for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been quite a varied journey. I grew up in South Africa. I lived in Durban on the coast for a couple of years, and my parents were always at the beach. My dad was a surf lifesaver there, competed there, and then we moved inland and we'd go to the beach, I guess, on holidays, and I'd go swimming. And where we lived in South Africa was quite dangerous, and so we had 6-foot fences and 6-foot walls backing between our homes and the road, but then between all our houses were low fences, and everyone around our house had swimming pools, I guess, as many houses in South Africa used to have. And so I'd spend my weekends playing tennis and then jumping across everyone's fences, and we'd all go swimming in everyone's pools. So okay. I used to do a fair bit of that. We immigrated to Australia, and I guess as a 16-year-old girl in a new country where you sound different, it's quite hard to fit in.
And where did you find yourself in Australia? Where were you living when you immigrated?
So we immigrated to Toowoomba, okay. So west of Brisbane.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I guess I'd swam, and it sort of was something appealed to me. I swam at school in South Africa, and I played water polo. And tennis was my main sport, but I couldn't play tennis. There was a club there, and there were just boys that were playing, and they weren't very nice to me. Oh. So I was like, okay.
They weren't welcoming of the new girl.
They weren't welcoming of the new girl, and the new girl who was beating them. You know, that's just a whole other kettle of fish that we could talk about. But I swam squad there, and I really enjoyed it. I, you know, had a lovely group of friends, and that became, I guess, my social outlet. And I'd play water polo at school. which was quite nice. My grandfather was a Springbok, an Olympic water polo player. So,
oh wow!
I have, you know, and the
it's in the genes.
It's in the genes, and it was really lovely whenever they came and visited us. He would try and come in the water polo season, so it was really, I guess, quite special to have that. So yeah, I did swimming, swam at school, and then obviously being in Toowoomba, not very close to the beach, I really didn't do much beach swimming. And then I did a teaching degree, and then I moved into Western Queensland, west of Roma to Mitchell, and I taught there for a couple of years, traveling around. And so there again, being even further away from the beach and the water. I did my usual stint in the UK, and then I came back and moved to Sydney, and it was there, I guess, that coming back to moving closer to the ocean, I started ocean swimming.
And really, so you moved to the eastern suburbs?
I moved to the eastern suburbs and started swimming at Bondi, swam with a great group of people run by Spot Anderson, who's quite a legend in the ocean swimming and Ironman world, I guess. He does crazy things.
And when you say you started swimming, did you just wander down to Bondi and say, hey, I want to swim with some people and joined like the, is it the Bondi Icebergs or was it, there's an ocean swimming group there?
Yeah, that you joined? I joined, I guess social media had just started to grow a little bit, and I'd been seeing, I was part of a running group. I do road running as well, and I'd heard talk of a group called the Salties that swim on a Friday from North Bondi. So I went and I was watching what they were doing, and I went and just joined in with them. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that, you know, first 6:15 on a Friday morning before work. It's quite nice to do with a group of, you know, similar aged, like-minded people. So it was quite nice. And then through that, I saw different races, you know, ocean races, swimming in the harbour and swimming from Bondi to Bronte. And as a runner in my head, I thought, oh, you know, that's quite a short distance, you know, about 3 or 4 Ks. It's not very far, I'm sure I could swim.
There's a vast difference.
There is a big difference. But I, you know, and that I think I did my first, I was actually only looking yesterday, I thought, oh, when did I join Salties? And it was about, it was in 2016 or 2017, so quite a little while ago. No. And so I guess, yeah, I've just picked it up, and then I've joined different social groups that go swimming first thing in the morning, and then I've done squad swimming. I did with Bondi Fit for a little while before Spot moved to Lake Macquarie, and then I joined Vlad Swim, which is run by a Russian. He's from Russia area.
It's interesting because I was doing some reading on you, and Vlad Swim kept on cropping up, and I'm like, what is Vlad Swim?
It's run by this beautiful man named Vlad, and he just has the most wonderful attitude, not only swimming to life, and he's just smile and be happy. So when you're in big waves, you're smiling and being happy, and it's just really.
I feel like that would be the antithesis for a lot of people. It'd be like, there is nothing to smile about here right now.
It is, but it suddenly snaps you out. And so I guess it was, and a lot of the people I was swimming with in the squad swim the channel. They swim the English Channel. It's almost like a rite of passage, the North Channel. The bridges swim in New York, Cook Strait in New Zealand. There's one in Japan. And, you know, I thought, oh, that's really nice, but I kind of am not someone who likes to do everything that everyone else does, because I think if you're around the same, you know, around people the whole time, you can't, by the end of it, you kind of think, well, I feel like I've done the English Channel already based on everyone's stories and experiences. So, yeah, I guess it, you know, if I was going to do something like that, I'd love to do it with friends or a group of people I knew, because I think that's quite fun. And I've been waiting to do the Rottnest Channel swim or the Rottnest swim with some friends who live in Perth, so that would be fun. But for myself, you know, it would be nice to do those, but it's not necessarily something that I have, I feel, oh yes, it's definitely on my bucket to-do list.
So tell me, in terms of how the idea for Swimming Lord Howe came along, what triggered that?
It was a couple of different things. It was about July, August last year. We were all deep in COVID. And I think it had been my birthday and I thought, oh, what am I doing? You know, some of those things where you go, what am I doing with my life? I'd lost one of the jobs that I had. I felt like I was on a hamster wheel. And then I thought, well, and I'm a school teacher, I fell back on being a school teacher. And I thought, where can I go for a holiday that's within, you know, within our New South Wales borders? Because we were really restricted. And I thought, well, if they closed the borders, where could I go? And so I thought, oh, Lord Howe would be really cool. And in amongst, there was almost like a 2-week period. I was doing a lot of swimming during COVID. It was a way of dealing, I guess. And for many people, is it dealing with the pressures of what was going on in the world around us. It was a way of meeting and catching up with friends, checking up on people, you know, and early in the morning at 6 o'clock, they're not going to be many people. So it's generally from a physical spreading diseases point of view.
Yeah. So when they like locked down the beaches, what happened then?
The beaches were locked, but there were some beaches that weren't. So, you know, we'd go adventuring to beaches that weren't locked. So, you know, we found Little Bay near Botany. There's a couple of other little secret beaches in and around Sydney that not many people know about. So I could tell you, but then
Everyone will know.
Not everyone will know. But they are there to be found, and if you look carefully on a map, you can find them. And so, yeah, I did. Two girlfriends and I, we went exploring, and that's what we did. We also did our own, we swam from Palm Beach to Little Bay over 3 weekends as lockdown opened up and we could travel a bit more, but, you know, crossing the harbour. So in that time, it forced me to look within my own area of things to do and things to try. And I guess that, you know, like many of us, we had some quieter time to think and process things and look at, well, what are the things we do enjoy doing? There was also an instance where a whole group of us were going swimming. And mind you, I'd been swimming about 135 kilometres a month, which is a significant distance. And I'm a competent swimmer. I'm a strong swimmer.
Yes, obviously. And
so, you know, and I don't mind going out deep and, you know, swimming by myself.
And we must talk about that because I think for many people the fear of swimming in deep ocean water would stop them, you know, from doing that.
Absolutely. And there was the whole group of us going swimming from Coogee to Maroubra, which is, I'm going to say it and it's going to sound crazy, but it was just a 6K swim, which is a big, but it's a it's a big swim though, but
yes, it's
straight and it's safe. And it was the most glorious winter's morning and the sun was up and we were all going in little groups and, you know, we just naturally tend to just go with your friends. And one gentleman pulled me aside and said, no, Lauren, you can't swim with us. You need to go and swim with this other group. They're going to be leaving a little bit later and we'll be a bit slower, so you'll probably be better swimming with them.
Oh.
And I said, okay. And I thought, oh, well, maybe it's a safety thing. You know, they've got too many people. You know, and there were people going on this swim with water bottles and gels and all that kind of things. And my two girlfriends and I were just, we just went because we had a gel down our cozzies because we thought we may or may not need it, but, you know. But I was a little bit miffed and I was like, oh. okay, I'll just, you know, I was like, I'll just let him, you know, I'll let this, you know, go. And as we headed out past Wiley's Baths, I just thought, and I was with the group and they were slow and they were taking their time, which was absolutely fine because, you know, everyone is at their own pace and their own speed. But I just thought, It was one of the first bigger swims where you could have more people. And I thought, I don't want to give up my Saturday morning swim with my girlfriends in perfect conditions to swim with other people, because that's just not what I wanted, and because someone else had said I couldn't. So I slowly dropped the group and caught up to the girls, and they, you know, we had a bit of a chat and discussion about what had just ensued and why I was furious.
Yes.
And then we swam to the headland. Everyone was faffing around, and we swam back and beat them all in.
No,
and
it was great. Absolutely.
But it was just one of those moments where, you know, you have to acquiesce and go, okay, you know, I'll participate for this section. And in the end, you have to, you know, make that decision. Is someone else's comment going to, you know, change what you're going to experience for that moment or that period of time? And yes.
And so is that part of what spurred you on to then, you know, a 35-kilometre swim as opposed to a 6-kilometre swim? There's a very big difference there between those distances.
It is. It's a big distance. And I also wanted to – I felt I had something to prove, but, you know, it was going back to that point where I just thought, well – you know, I've been playing it safe my whole life, and I've just, you know, done the swim with some friends. We've totally beaten these guys. Maybe there is more to my potential or more to what I can do. My great granny was the first woman admitted to the bar in South Africa, and she had to write her exams twice because they thought she cheated the first time.
Because she'd succeeded in passing.
But she worked with Emily Pankhurst, and she used to write some of the speeches for the Zulu King. So I thought I'm playing it too safe in my life. I need to push it. What can I do at the moment? What can I do now with the skills that I've got to do something a little bit different, to do something out of the ordinary? And that's where I thought, I mapped out Lord Howe Island, and I thought, 35 kilometres. You know, we swam from Palm Beach to Little Bay. That was a longer distance. I probably could do it. And I chatted to my coach, and I said to Vlad, I said, this is very much on the down low, but do you think I could do it? And he's like, oh, yes, absolutely. And so I decided to do it in about August, September.
So how long was the time between deciding to do it and actually doing it?
It ended up being about 6 months.
August
to April, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously you had been swimming longer distances over the course of each week.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been, and I'd already been doing big distance. I had a super foundation of training. And in actual fact, I only started to adjust my training in about February. So, and that was just doing, it increased to a couple of weeks of swimming for, you know, one swim being 3 hours, and then another week swimming 4 hours, and then 5 hours and 6 hours. So it suddenly started getting bigger. The biggest issue was the people I was swimming with were very conscious that I was suddenly getting in the water an hour before them, or and then staying afterwards. And because I knew that up until when I decided to do the swim, no one had ever done it before, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to be the first person, not only the first woman, but the first person?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had heard it was the first woman, but indeed it's the first person to have ever done that.
Well, this is where it all gets quite complicated, because I was up until the middle of February I was the first person that anyone knew that was going to do it. And I hadn't told anyone, because being in the first and adventure swimming is really quite competitive. And once you open it up, it's also an expensive sport. And so, you know, you require a lot of support in terms of, you know, even getting to the island, you know, it's quite expensive, boats and all that kind of thing. So, and there are lots of people who do ocean swimming who are quite wealthy, and I'm a school teacher with and who just lost their job in the middle of COVID. So it wasn't like I was flush with funds and I could go, yep, this is what I'm going to do. So it became this very tight, quiet thing that I was working on. You know, there's Strava. I don't know if you've heard of Strava where people, yep. And so I had to shut that all down because people were suddenly questioning the distances I was doing, where I was going, how far. So I had to really knuckle down. But there's a wonderful gentleman. His name is Linton, and he lives on the Gold Coast. And on about the 10th of February, Vlad pulled me to the side at the pool one day as I was going in. And he said, Lauren, Linton is on the island. And I never forget that day. I think I swam for about 300 meters crying.
Oh, no. Because
I just thought, this guy.
He's
going to do it. And I can't tell anybody that this is what I was going to do. And anyway, you know, he took his whole family there, I believe, and, you know, waited for perfect conditions. And he swam and you know, he did it, which is phenomenal. He, and this is where I'm still working on being the first person ratified, because part of doing a swim like this is there is a data process and entering data and making sure it's a verified swim. And that means tracking every sort of half an hour what you're eating, what the conditions are like, what the coordinates are. It's quite an intensive role.
So who is a swim like this registered with? Who is it ratified by in the?
Absolutely. So it's an international body. It's called the Marathon Swimming Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And so not long before I left, a girlfriend who I swim with, who swam the channel many, many times, and younger than me too, quite a lot younger than me, she's just turned 30, she said to me, Lauren, she said, and I never expected this from her, she said, Lauren, she said, you need to have it ratified. You need it to go down in history. So that was really heartwarming because I know as girls and women, we can be quite competitive. Yeah. And so it was, so that was my goal too, is not only to do the swim, but to have it ratified and go down in history. So fingers crossed, all the boxes. I went over the top in as much data and footage as I could, so we're still waiting to hear back on the ratification process, but hopefully it should come through.
Well, fingers crossed with that. Yeah. In terms of per week, what sort of distances were you swimming in the lead up to?
About 50 k's. I ended up doing about 50, 55, sometimes 60 k's a week.
And it sounds like it was a mix of pool swimming and ocean swimming. And I'm assuming you're doing some strength training as well?
I was doing a little bit of strength training. I don't think you can ever do enough. And I definitely wish I'd done more. But definitely I go and do a pool in the morning before work. So between sort of 5-6 Ks in the morning. And then in the afternoons I'd go for an ocean swim. And it was generally a lap of Bondi, just as a way of stretching out, keeping my arms moving. And it's just something I love doing. And during, you know, it was beautiful weather to train in. We've had a really fairly nice sort of summer.
When you say a lap of Bondi, what's the distance as a lap of Bondi?
A lap of Bondi is about 1.4 or 1.7 kilometres. I don't actually know to be exact, purely because everyone who I swim with, we all have different types of GPS tracking watches, and mine always reads more than others. so my watch always says 2.2 Ks, but sometimes people say, no, Lauren, it's 1.6. So
just go with yours, I say.
I generally tend to go with mine, but there again, too, on the swim, I couldn't wear my watch for ratification processes because that would have given my pace and distance and time and what have you. So what the distance came up with is what was sent.
Right. So you've gotten yourself to the island. You talked about support. So you have a support boat with you the whole way around, I would imagine.
Yes. So I had very generously the Marine Rescue. We had their boat, and then they had an IRB boat. And so and it was great. The IRB was driven for about the last half of the swim was the policeman. So the sole policeman of the island came and joined us. And it was quite scary the night before. I sat my dad down and I said, "Dad, the police, there's only one policeman on the island and he's coming on my swim. Please, let's do this properly." And I said, "Please don't pull him out the water. Don't let him pull me out the water." I was so nervous.
Oh, really? So in case you got in trouble, he would be like,
we're going to cancel it. And because I told
not on my watch.
Yeah, and I told everyone the only point of pulling me out was if I'd been bitten by sharks, because, you know, if you're bitten by sharks, more sharks will come. And yes, that was the only time that they could have pulled me out the water. So then I had the policeman coming. I was petrified.
Anyway, did you brief him on that? Is that now listening?
I kind of did. I was like, "Oh, hi." And anyway, the most gorgeous gentleman and just so enthusiastic. And there was no way he was going to pull me out at all. He was, you know, he was quietly cheering me along and just smiling. He's got the most beautiful chiseled jaw, and every time I was looking at these cliffs, I'd look at him and he'd be smiling and he's like, "This way, Lauren." I was like, "Oh, this is fabulous."
I love it.
Anyway,
that's part of what got you through, by the sounds of it.
Just to smile and say, "Yes, okay, this is easy."
Lovely. Not all the training that you did in the lead up, just a lovely smile and a chiseled jaw. I love it.
We have a special offer for all our listeners. Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $39.99 and save 10% on the newsstand price. That's 3 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $39.99. You'll find our special subscription offer at australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. That's australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.
So, you know, the day comes, the sun rises. What time are you up? What time are you in the water? What are your preparations before you get in the water? I know a lot of people, when they do distance swimming, I used to talk to Susie Maroney, famous marathon swimmer, and you would see her covered in what looked like white lotion. So yes, I'm assuming you're doing the same sorts of things. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. So it was quite... I started off the morning how I would normally for a swim. I made my breakfast.
What is the breakfast of a marathon swimmer? Well,
I think everyone does it differently. I just had boiled eggs and Vegemite and toast and coffee because that's just what I normally like. And, you know, I'd had gut problems before, so I knew it would be good for me. So that's what I had, which was great. And then got to the boat ramp at about 10 to 6 in the morning, and we had a read through of the rules of the ratification just so everyone knew what was going to be happening and what they can and couldn't do. And then at about 20 to 7-ish, we headed off. And it was great because I had two friends who were on the island for a holiday. We'd had some dramas getting to the island anyway, but that's another story. But so Beth and Matt were on the island, and it was terrific because both Beth and my mum were using the channel grease, so that white stuff, to put all over my body, and it was thick. It's three parts lanolin, petroleum jelly, and zinc oxide. So it's basically
just coating.
It was lovely and thick. I feel like I was a white seal. But they went, you know, said to Beth and mine's friendship has changed because she gets me to places most people wouldn't go to except my mum. So, yeah.
Just for people who don't know what it is, why you do that, what is the reason?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's definitely a question I'm often asked. It's to help chafing. So, you know, chafing from the salt water, just the positioning of your body against your swimming togs. So it's to stop the chafing. And then it's a sunscreen. It's a very solid sunscreen. I didn't get sunburned or sun anything on my body at all. So,
because I imagine all day in the ocean, in the sun, you know.
Absolutely. So no, but and it doesn't, lots of people asked about it not you know, keeping stings or jellyfish bites or keeping me warm, and didn't do anything of that. It's literally just like sunscreen, a good sunscreen, and a good Vaseline.
Okay.
And deep shave. Yeah.
So off we head. You've got your togs on. You've got a cap and goggles.
Literally togs. My budgie smugglers, a cap and goggles. And there is, I picked up a little stone on the side and waited for the hoot horn, and yeah, I headed off. And it was just beautiful because it was early in the morning. The sun was out and I swam across a reef. So it was incredible to see the reef and the coral and the beautiful fish.
Mm. And at this point, the conditions were calm?
Fairly calm. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of wind, and then I got to the first cliff. I think it's called North Point. And I went, as I was going towards that, I saw the kayak moving up and down, and I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. And it was, and it was great because I love big waves, and they were nice, clean waves. You could time them. They weren't going anyway, so it was just lovely.
So they're not breakers, these are just the big floaters, is that what you're...
No, they were crashing, but we were about, I'd say, maybe 100 meters away from the cliff, so it wasn't like I was getting tossed with them.
Okay, right, yeah. And this is at the north end of the island, yeah?
The north end of the island, yeah. So I started at the north end, and off I went, and it was just beautiful because then we went around, and then the sun sort of was properly up by then, and it was just as I had hoped it would be, these beautiful grand cliffs and green on the cliffs and the blue water. And there were I wasn't expecting, there were birds swooping. It was just beautiful.
It
was
lovely. Magical, yes.
It was so magical. And there was a bird swooping, and I called it Philomena because I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to, you know, start naming things just to keep, because I was having such a grand time. But apparently, I heard the night afterwards that it was a booby and it had this huge big beak. And then after about 3 hours, I had two enormous kingfish just dart for me in the water. They were just incredible. And I wasn't expecting them. I knew I was going to be expecting sharks, but at that point I wasn't expecting any fish because they just darted straight for me, but just, you know.
And massive.
Massive, just enormous. And the most beautiful colouring, though. And I was like, okay, I'm alive now. Let's keep going. And so headed out around sort of over the North Point and then started heading down past the North Point of the island. And then there was a long straight stretch, and I was like, yep, I'm ready to stop this party festive vibe that it feels like we're having and do some serious swimming. And it was. I just swam for an hour solid, and it was just a beautiful, calm rhythm. There is a bit of chop in the water, but I don't know. It was just when you do endurance sports, you get into an absolute zone of just feeling strong and I was conscious of it.
I think there's nothing kind of sweeter than hitting that, you know, that hitting your rhythm and
absolutely.
Just, yeah.
You're so right. And I was there, but I was also very conscious of not to take advantage of that because I knew I had a significant chunk left of the swim and that it, you know, you just have to be cautious and you have to be humble in that point too. And it was great. And then we passed Ned's beach, and then I heard we were heading towards Blinky's beach, which is sort of towards the south end of the island. And I knew that that's where the sharks were. And so I was ready for that.
Mm-hmm. How did you know that? Locals had told you that or that?
I'd read it and I heard Linton, who'd been before, that's where he'd set the sharks. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to take information in when you need to. Mm.
And when you say sharks, Makos, tigers?
They're Makos, tigers and Galapagos sharks are the sharks that are native to that area. So I had my friend who was there to be photographing and videoing this, he just decided to paddle in kayak for up until this point. And we got to towards Gower Island, which isn't towards the bottom, and the winds were coming. And I'd said to Brad, okay, Brad, and we both said at this one particular point we'd stop and have our nutrition and have something to eat. And we just never got to that point. And I hadn't really been talking to anyone on the boat. And at that point I said, are we moving? I kept saying, are we moving? And we were definitely not moving.
Ooh.
And so I tried every strategy I knew of getting through currents. I did the half an hour of solid fast swimming. And at the end of that half hour, I just stopped and the lactic acid went through me. And this is, I mean, the sharks had already started coming and circling, but they just came even closer, you know, like a meter below me.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were circling and they were behind me. And I thought, no, I've got to be calm. And so I did. I just kept changing where I was looking. At that point, Brad had said he'd had enough paddling. And I said, that's totally fine. Like, the fact that you wanted to stay for this long is really lovely of you. But no, you just definitely get out. So, so we were just for 2 hours in the same spot. Just
and with sharks circling.
With sharks circling, and then
how do you manage your fear in a situation like that? Because these are not you know, black tip reef sharks who are known to, you know, be quite docile and, you know, friendly. How do you manage that?
I knew they would be there, and I've swum with some sharks before that are around Sydney beaches. I have this belief that we are in the sharks' environment, but we are there just as much as they are there. And so, you know, it would be going into someone else's home. You wouldn't necessarily just go in and pull everything apart and, you know, run around crazily. You know, that it's just being calm and just watching it and being aware. And so I guess that's what I was. I was very conscious, though, of my breathing. I was conscious of getting tired because I wanted my body to come across to the sharks as being strong and well, because, you know, sharks sense fear, they sense weakness. So I kept that mindset that I was strong and that I was healthy and that I was, you know, I could do that. And so I don't know if it was a combination of a couple of different things. They kept following me. They circled me. They were behind me. At one point, we tried to have a stop for something to eat. I was throwing the container inside was a Vegemite sandwich and a wave came. Everything was just gross. And then my boat captain, who'd not really just been smiling and going, you're doing well, Lauren, keep it up. He's like, he pointed down and he pointed forward. And as I looked down, there was a tiger shark in front. Imagine if you're going to give someone a hug and they're coming in for the awkward hug and
mm-hmm.
And there's that position where they're there but not quite in there. That was the tiger shark face to face, in my space. In my space, in line with my shoulder, right in my hands. And I was like, okay, goodbye.
So then, did you push it away or did you?
No. I can't remember. It was just something very fast.
Very instinctual, it was just,
and I had the cup of the container. So I literally put that down. I don't know what happened to the Vegemite sandwich.
Soggy mess.
Yeah. And then I just moved. But there again, moving with nowhere to go in his car. Anyway, because then I had a look and then he was behind me because he was a different colour to the Galapagos sharks that were around.
So, and even at that point you weren't thinking, all right, maybe I do want to get out. Maybe it's enough. I haven't moved for 2 hours. I now have, you know, sharks circling me.
I was genuinely having a great time. I was tired. It was taking a long time. But I just thought it's just part of the process and I just you just accept these things as they are. And then, you know, we eventually moved around the bottom of the point and then we headed out back in.
And it was still daylight at this
point? It was still daylight and then as we circled around heading in towards we went around the south end and heading then back up towards north, so I guess just over halfway. And I saw the sun was sort of near the top of the headland that we'd started off and I was like, great, there's 3 hours to go. it'll be time for sundowners.
I'll have a G&T.
G&T on the beach in 3 hours' time. I can do this in 3 hours.
Superb.
I've never been so disappointed in my entire life. The sun went down in half an hour and it was dark and cold and I was in big rough water then and it was just choppy and miserable. And
is your way lit at that point? Is there a big spotlight on the boat showing you where you meant to go?
So the spotlight came so that even though the sun had gone down there, I guess there was still the daylight. But then eventually we cut through and we were heading in towards the reef, towards the end, and the main boat couldn't follow us anymore because we had to cut through the reef. So we had the IRB with the policeman driving it and my mum, and I think everyone was in that little IRB at the time, and they were pointing the flashlight. I'd also got to a point where I'd had enough of being in the water. My goggles were full of grease and foggy. Everyone was going, swim to this light, swim to that buoy, and I couldn't see. And I knew the line that I'd wanted to take. It was the straightest line, but they were moving me through the reef. Obviously they could see and I couldn't, so you know, and at that point my trusting in them and I was just like, you know, had gone. I don't know how I rounded in, but I eventually rounded back in, and then as I was coming across they were shouting and horns. It was just phenomenal. They were horns.
All the people on the island.
The people on the island had come out and were cheering, and it's just phenomenal because you know, all the school children out there, and this was 20 to 9 at night, so it was late. And it's so fun because I know everyone, lots of people, when they knew I was coming, were having bets whether I would or wouldn't do it because the conditions were forecasted to be miserable. And they were like, she's not going to do it. And even someone that was there on the boat ramp had told me the night before that I definitely wouldn't be doing it. She was the first person there to pull the kayak out. It was just, I mean, I've got tears in my eyes telling you this
absolutely.
Because it was just one of those most phenomenal moments. And the doctor was there with her children and she was just phenomenal. She's like, Lauren, I'm the doctor. I'm going to help you. This is what we're going to do. And she just wrapped me up into blankets. And then she.
So you could walk, you could stand up and
I
walk.
I could stand up, but there was very jelly. It wasn't a very, very pretty sight. And then we got back to where I was staying, and it was a lovely, special thing. My mum and I were literally in the shower, and she was just helping me, trying to wash off this grease.
And so then straight to bed after that?
There was some phone calls, and then I had, it was, you know, just totally phenomenal. Someone from the Australian was suddenly emailing me on Facebook and wanted to have an interview the next day. So everything suddenly started moving super, super quickly, so which was remarkable but really amazing too, because I literally felt like I was just going for a swim and I'd just taken a crew with me, and it's just from there, it's just...
Yeah. Master of understatement, I think. No. I'm just popping out for a swim. I'll be back in 13 and a half hours.
And that's it. You know, in any day, if the conditions had been flat, I know based on my speed and everything, I would have done it in 10 hours or so. And that's it. It was just the conditions. And I kind of think it was a well-earned title.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely a well-earned title. And when will you find out about ratification?
I'm not too sure. They're going to let me know, and I probably could email them and ask them, but I'm a bit nervous.
That's exactly right. We'll just wait.
We'll just wait. Yeah. And they get very busy.
And so, you know, you're back up, you know, you're back to normal life and you're back in Bondi and you're still swimming every day and thinking of the next adventure, dreaming up the next adventure, the next challenge.
Absolutely. So, and that's, I guess, the next thing at the moment is, and part of doing this swim, I love watching adventure films and going to film festivals, and I've always thought, oh, how cool would it have been to make one? And so we're in the process of putting together a film to highlight the swim, and just because it's the most phenomenal scenery.
It is spectacular,
isn't it? It's just beautiful. But also since doing the swim, it's been – interesting to hear feedback from, you know, I'm a school teacher, from some of the girls, mums, and some of the community, and just people around generally who go, wow, Lauren, that was amazing. You know, people need to hear more about this kind of thing, or have, you know, you've been an inspiration. And I don't see myself as that, but I guess the idea of making the film properly is what's taking up my time now.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's an absolute pleasure and an honour to talk to you, and I'm really keen to follow your next adventure wherever it takes you.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Australia. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out. Write us an email, podcast@australiangeographic.com, or find us on Instagram @AustralianGeographic. And if you go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia, you'll find a special subscription offer. So don't wait. Go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks for listening, and hear you next time.